Hi, everybody. I see faces that I know. I was going to go by script, but I don't know. I'm going to wing it. Because part of how I'm going to wing it is how us parents can all connect better with our children is by speaking from the heart. I am not a speaker. I'm not a public speaker. I didn't even know how to put this thing on, so just bear with me, okay? So it's good to be here with you guys. Thanks for being here. I want to start with just, I'm going to throw some themes out to all of us to talk about and think about, and at the end, we'll have some questions so we can share and ask questions, and maybe if we have time to do a little bit of, like, anybody wants to bring a situation they're going through at home, just the basics of it, not the details, we can do that if somebody wants to do that, so... My first theme, actually, Jim, if I could have you just pass this around, take one each, if you want. It's just a little exercise we're going to try in a little bit. My first concept I'm going to throw out is the mantra, connection before correction. So how many of you guys have heard this before? Two, is that right? Connection before correction. So I did not grow up in that era of parenting. In the 1960s and 70s, that was not our way. But I've learned a lot by being a counselor and just working with families and my own family. So some stats on this. And I want, as I talk, I want you guys to please try to think about how to connect before we correct our kids and how we engage with our children in that way. So last year, I think I was telling Jim recently that the Surgeon General announced for the first time, apparently, in U.S. history, how many people have heard about this, the youth crisis. Did anybody read about that online? The youth crisis. First time in history, the Surgeon General announced that the youth are in a crisis in America. Now, what that means statistically is huge increase in rates of ER visits for anxiety, depression, self-harm, and kids who want to kill themselves. I mean, it's serious stuff. So that's a pretty significant statistic that we all should be paying attention to. It may not affect us personally, but, you know, the state of the world is tough right now. And so how can we think together about how to see the world through our kids' and our teens' eyes to try to create better understanding of what they're going through, especially in light of the bigger picture of all the... We don't have to go into the pandemic and all that. We all know what's going on. We're all feeling it. So part of how I want to talk with everybody tonight is around biology. It can be kind of a boring subject, but I think it's very important to learn brain biology and what goes on for all of our brains. All of our brains are exactly the same. So it's good information to know and how to help our kiddos with anxiety and depression and other issues too. So the brain really wants to ideally operate in balance. How many people, if you want to raise your hand, how many people feel like their brain operates in balance most of the time? How do you do that? You come up here. No? Okay.
He's actually a chronic liar.
Oh, we have therapy for that. That's how we're wired to operate, though, to really be imbalanced and in balance, not imbalanced. That's funny. Totally. And that's part of what counselors do is help people figure out what's going on, you know, what's going on with your physical health, your mental health, your emotional health, and your spiritual health. Because that's how many of us see balance, is in those realms of holistic, the whole person. So everything I'm going to talk about tonight, there's no quick fix at all. There's no magic thing I have, guys. All this takes time. So in a little bit, we'll look at a video together. Andrew's going to play that. And it shows how our biology, how we learn things and how hard it is to relearn. So it's a fun video to watch. So I'll go over teaching some brain biology, especially related to kids and teenagers. I'll focus on the interplay between our thinking brain and our feeling brain. I'll talk a little bit about that, okay? And I'll offer, in the end, offer skills and ways to cope with this all, for all of us. I think we all need a little help there, so. Okay, the next concept I want us to all to think about as I talk is, how stressed are your kids? Like, I'm just gonna let that settle for a minute, okay? Think about that on your own families. How stressed are your kids? Alrighty. And a question I have to pair with that is, what's best for their health? And what I mean by health is their full, like, emotional, mental, physical, and spiritual health. We all know screen time has increased quite a bit. So with that, we've lost some other really vital, important things like being playful, going outside in nature, free time that isn't filled with anything. That's part of the hardships of the modern world is we've lost a lot of things. They've been replaced, and it's really hard because it's so alluring. Those screens are. Who doesn't have a phone in here? Oh, sorry, you guys. That's okay. You'll get it eventually, right? You will. You'll know what all this is about. You use parents? Okay. So what's also changed in our modern world is culturally, I think there's been a really big shift in achievement and production and all that, what I would call pressure on youth to get good grades. And I'm careful when I say that because I did that with my kids too. I'm like, you know, you got to go to school, you got to work at it. It's hard though, yeah? Isn't it so tough sometimes to get your kids to do that? Anybody here struggle with that, with kids and... Okay, so there's a reality to all this. Like, wait, it's not as easy as it sounds. So with that, I guess less free time, less play, less fun, more screens, and then pressure, we have lots of anxiety. And then we get a pandemic, and that happens. And I think what the pandemic, what us counselors have discovered is the pandemic just intensified what was already happening. It just made everything just bigger and harder to deal with. So, okay, let's dive in a little bit to just a basic about brain biology, okay? This is our prefrontal cortex. It's the part of our brain that thinks, that judges, that has reasoning. It's a very important part for us to navigate life. But underneath that, I'm going to use my hand as an example. Believe it or not, this is what I learned. I hope it's correct. But they say the brain's about the size of a fist, the actual brain, not, you know, the skull. It takes up a lot of space. So approximately, is that true? We have a doctor in the house. Approximately? Okay. So the way I want to describe this is this frontal brain, your thinking brain, is this front part. And then if you go into the brain, in the middle is a little tiny portion called the amygdala. How many people know about the amygdala? They've heard of it or are familiar? Okay, great.
I do now.
Okay.
<week. laughs> My amygdala's on fire!
Yes, it is. We'll come up and use it as an example. Maybe. Sign of release, though. It's an important part, though. It's so, like, when your kids get upset, when you get upset, that part of your brain is activated. And we know this now because they've done research on it. We didn't know these things, you know, just even 25, 35 years ago. They didn't know. So this is, the amygdala is that part of the brain that, it's the, called the emotional brain. It's a part that worries. It's a part that sees every stressor as either a real or a perceived threat. So it's very intense feeling to have your amygdala activated. Everything from anger to just feeling completely overwhelmed and shut down. So I have a feeling a lot of us can relate to these experiences. So we also have something called neuropathways, and we'll look at the video in just a little bit that we'll talk about that. So we experience different situations, and our neural pathways send messages back and forth. They help us navigate what to do. So the memories, something I learned in school I wasn't aware of, is our memories are actually stored in our emotional brain. That it's much better at keeping memory than our frontal brain. That's why we can't remember a whole lot. They say the average brain, the frontal brain, remembers like 10 to 15% of everything we learn, which is, that's not a lot. So just keep in mind that this is where the memories of our experiences, all experiences, get stored, okay? So sometimes we're not able to think through our issues when our amygdala is on fire. We can't think. We go to normal reactions, fight, flight, or freeze. So does anybody know about that? Fight, flight, freeze? Okay, a couple hands, great. New information. If I'm going too fast, will you guys slow me down? Okay, let me know. So that's that hand model, is the fight, flight, freeze is our brain's way, our mind's way of trying to keep us safe. So where's the door here? Is there a door there? If a big giant grizzly bear came in this door right now, what would you guys do? I know what I'd do. I'd be out that door. So I'd be flighting. What do you guys think you would do, knowing what you know of yourself? Jim, we'll start with you. Like, think about it. If a big bear, grizzly bear, not just a bear, yeah. What do you think he'd do?
Is he bigger than me?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Way bigger than you.
I don't know. I would like to believe that I would run at him to save everyone over here.
Okay. You're closest, too, so.
That would be very attractive. Yeah.
So maybe a fight response, or maybe a flight, or a freeze. Do you think anybody in here might freeze? They might feel stuck and not be able to move.
Well, you did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But the body, I don't know if anybody's been, I mean, if you can think about, I know we've all had these kind of reactions, maybe not as intense as a grizzly bear, but this is powerful emotional and chemical reactions that happen in the brain. I know when I'm upset, oh man, you all think I'm calm all the time. I am not. Counselors get mad too. We're human. And my husband can vouch for that. He said my horns come out. I don't know what that means, but my horns come out. So he's like, your horns are coming out. Okay, I know I'm in fight. I know. Isn't he bad? No, he's not. That's my fight response, where I'm upset. I can't think about what's happening, and I need to learn to calm my amygdala down, and then I can think, like, okay, what happened? How do I feel about it? What do I need to do? You know, all the process of thinking through something. So, in addition, our brains have right, left sides, and there's a bridge called the corpus callosum that kind of connects them as far as messaging. So how many people, how many parents know that with kiddos, from the time they're infants, that they feel before they think? Like, that we actually know that. I didn't know that till I went to grad school. I raised three kids. We survived. But it's like, I wish I would have known this stuff when my children were younger. We didn't have the science behind this, so I didn't know, but I really wish I would have known that. It would have been so helpful. But science does show that infants, children, teens, and us too, it changes a little bit when we become adults, because we condition our thinking brain a lot more. For instance, through school, we learn to think. But kids feel, and then they have a, oh gosh, what's happening? They have a thought and then a behavior. So that is the natural way the brain was designed to work. I try to help my clients work with all the brain structures. Like, how can we think and feel through situations instead of just relying on one or the other? Alrighty. Any questions so far? Any at all? Comments or anything? Nope.
What's the age when that should transition, that sort of behavior? Is there a stage of life?
It really biologically doesn't transition. It's the way we learn that transitions it. Like, it doesn't switch. You know, and that's a whole nother lecture, but we're taught to think about things first, which has a real solid place in our lives. But What that does too is it kind of negates our emotions. Our emotions can get suppressed, which is where counseling can help people like really try to find out what's going on, what's under there, under the frustration or anxiety and so forth. So ideally, it's supposed to work in balance, like all synchronicity together, okay? Maybe back and forth, thinking about how you feel, feeling and wondering what you're thinking, that kind of emotion. So here's what's missing. Here's some of the kind of the, I want to fill in the gaps if I can, is, again, we're not taught how to regulate our emotions. I asked somebody today, was it maybe Andrew? I don't remember. How many of us in school or in even in our families or church, any format of learning, how many of us learn to, like, we're going to learn how to regulate your emotions? None of us. Where? See? That's why we're here, learning together, right? I'm hoping someday it will be taught in schools. I've thought about that, about getting on a platform or something to teach that, but that's a big task, and that means I would have to not do private practice. I'm not ready for that. So if anybody wants to pick up the baton and take it, come talk to me, okay? But introducing this into our school systems, like helping youth regulate and think about how they're feeling. So that's one thing that's missing. It's one of the reasons we kind of end up in counselors and pastors' offices is because we have an emotional brain and we don't know how to understand it. So another goal of learning today is to understand emotional regulation. You'll hear me say that off and on, all right? Okay. So when we have, let's go back to the grizzly bear situation, okay? The brain says, oh no, danger. Like, that's a real danger. If it were a test coming up for your teenager and they're super nervous, that might feel like a danger to them. They might feel their heartbeat increase, sweaty, can't sleep at night. I mean, what other things you got? My kids are grown up, so what else are you all hearing about test taking? Does anybody have kiddos in here who struggle with that? No one? Okay, that's great. I'm impressed.
We don't want to embarrass our kiddos.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, the ones who aren't here, though. But you all know each other, so it doesn't work. Okay. But that's not a bad, see, there's not, I don't see that as a bad thing, that we struggle with test taking. It's like, it's a real thing. It's common, obviously. I can tell already it's a common thing that children deal with. So I wish I had a teen here to, well, I can use my daughter. My daughter, Brittany, she's 28 now. She struggled so much taking tests. And if I had had some of this info back then, I would have been able to help her more than we did. We helped her, but I would have understood the origins of some of her anxiety. So to her, it was like a physical shutdown. She would go into freeze mode, couldn't think, panic, heart racing, sweating, felt like she was going to grow up. I mean, I was like, wow, I had no idea she felt so much anxiety around it. So again, some of the skills we'll review or talk about later will help that anxious brain calm down so you can take, you know, face the task. Okay. A little fun fact, the corpus callosum, the research shows it's larger in females, and that they say it explains a lot of why boys have a more difficult time with impulsivity and mature later is because that part of their brain is smaller. So I thought that was. And new research, I just learned this recently, is they're finding that a lot of males, they're finding they don't have full brain development till like 24 to 28. That explains my son's behavior. No surprise. Oh, yeah. See, it's all the same, right? Yeah, my son's 24, and I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? What's going on here? But he tells me, Mom, I'm dense. You told me. Men are, they learn slower. So I didn't call him dense. Don't do that. He's self-proclaiming, you know, men's brains are denser. Dense. I'm like, okay. So let's get to, let's maybe a good time to show the video, and then I'll talk about something called neuroplasticity. Making shifts. That's what this gentleman did. It took him 8 months for him to think about a different way to do something and how powerful the brain circuitry in our minds are. So again, I'll reiterate with the kiddos, when we talk about coping, it's gonna take time to change, I guess, the patterns or the, depending on how long anxiety is occurring. Sometimes it's chronic. Sometimes it's situational, like a bad thing's going on and it's up, or sometimes it's been going on for off and on. It just depends on the person, but think about, you know, that it will take time to make some changes and help your kids with that. So we're gonna do one more real quick fun exercise. I want you to, the papers, are they passed out? If you wanna do it, great. If you don't, you don't need to. But I just want you to fold it in half. That's an OCD person. I'm kidding. No, it doesn't matter. Fold it. Whatever you want to do, do it the way you want. Then fold it. When you're done the first fold, fold it in half again. Please. And then maybe another time. One more. And then if you want to, yeah, the papers are dark, it's hard to see. If you want to or you can fold it one more time. Up to you. Okay. When everyone's done, go ahead and unfold it. Okay. Everybody's probably got their paper unfolded. And then do it again. Same thing. I heard one comment already. What do you notice? That's right. How easy it is for your brain to boom, 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 instant, right? Another simplistic example of how our brains are willing to and able to relearn things. So keep that in mind when we're talking about anxiety and depression, okay? So, I'm curious, I don't wanna get into a deep conversation about this, but if anybody wants to, it's up to you guys, if you want to give one example of how one of your children might be struggling in relation to the pandemic. If anybody wants to, so we can bring some context into. So if you want to, if you don't, we can move on. The pandemic, like all that the pandemic has created. Yeah, all the stress and so forth. Go ahead. Right.
But she has so much panic around it. She's very happy-go-lucky, but just extreme.
Oh, that's rough.
She has like extreme tics that will show up. And I hate to plan things anymore in case they get canceled.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Like, it's like
okay.
That's specifically for
so it creates panic, that change, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or she just doesn't. Anytime we want to plan something, you can tell she holds back.
Okay, all right.
And then if any sort of what she perceives as a promise, so that maybe if she just has a major, it'll be something little right after it, but then she'll completely, like, you said we were going to watch this movie this week.
or whatever it is.
Yeah. Hang it on to that.
It's usually tied to something that was,
Okay. Well, that sounds very challenging. So really, really tough. In that case, how do we change the neural pathways? My first thought is in that kind of a situation is calm the brain down. Like, how do we day to day? It's a lot of time for parents to do what I'm proposing. Not always, not everything is time intensive, but we're all pretty busy, right? We're pretty busy, and this is not I don't have an easy fix for any of you. That's the bad news. The good news is, as you can see from videos and practices, we can, over time, apply things that might help calm her brain down. So if you want to talk a little bit about it after, you're welcome to come see me. But with your situation, keep in mind how to calm that brain as I talk, okay? Okay, that way the frontal brain can be more engaged and not the amygdala not so activated. So some of the common issues we're seeing as counselors right now, although these have been issues that have come up before, but we're seeing more of them, more, I guess, numbers in youth and children and teens is the attention deficits, ADD, ADHD, a lot more anxiety, depression, particularly social anxiety. Seeing a lot of social anxiety. So that tends to come with a lot of intense panic. And I offered a few resources. If you guys want, you can come take. There's not a lot. I was talking to Jim or Andrew about it earlier. As far as counselor referrals, I only refer counselors I know of and know how they work. Trial and error. I've learned that way. So there's only two people on this list because they're the ones I know, and they work with children and teens and adults too, but primarily their focus is on youth. So we do have a shortage. I don't know how many people have tried to get their children into counseling, but we do have a shortage of people who work with children, unfortunately. So these two ladies are terrific. If any of you seek help with either of them and they don't have availability, you can ask about a wait list, or you can ask them if they have other referrals, because often child therapists know other child therapists. So I work mainly with adults. I don't actually work with anybody under 13, but so I do work with teens. And then there's also a counselor in here who's in Bellingham, but he's great. He's a faith-based counselor who works with adults and couples, so he's terrific. Stephen Call, I'm not sure if anybody knows or have heard of him, Dr. Call. But he's great. He's a great resource. So in regards to social anxiety, there's a video on here, a TED Talk video. It's so fun to watch, but it's challenging because it talks about social anxiety and the fear of that. People even like greeting someone they don't know. Hi, how are you? That can be debilitating for some people. And to get themselves out there in situations that are unfamiliar and to put themselves out there. So there's a video on here that demonstrates what's that?
What's the video called?
It's called Exposure and Rejection Therapy. So the premise of it is you expose yourself to benign, non-rough or difficult things, and it helps you. Watch the video if you want, and you'll understand the point of it. I'll leave it at that. We have an hour, so I could talk about so many things. Yeah, go ahead.
Sweating and all that. And I just wonder if there's other ways that especially our kids' body manifests anxiety than just the typical
body symptoms.
Yeah.
Kids shut down a lot. It's science and research has proven that they go more to freeze. So I don't know if anybody's seen that here, but they shut down, they get quiet. We can say things like, what are you thinking? Or how are you doing? Or trying to engage them on a cognitive level, and they're just like, I don't know. That's called freeze mode.
That was called the teen years.
It's that too. It's that too. It's all of it. It's complex. There's no one thing, but you can tell, like, maybe their posture might change. lower posture, slumping, eyes down, like everything is biology. So just be aware of what you're noticing and really just kind of maybe take a step back physically or mentally and go, wow, I'm noticing, like, you know, you look like you're upset. How are you? And just try to have these gentle, engaging conversations day to day. That's hard to do with parents. It's hard, right, guys? It's so hard. I was like, go, go, go. Just one thing to the next. And I'd like to repeat parenthood. I wish I could. But because it's easier. And one hope today is to give you some ideas and strategies to use at home so you don't have to struggle so much and the kids don't have to struggle so much. So that's one way that it might present. Or acting out is another way, like that acting out behavior. One way that might help you parents think about it is on a spectrum. We tend to be either like really quiet, that might mimic a depression or something like that, or reactive, and everything in between. So, you know, when I sit with clients, I kind of look at like, what's going on? Are they angry? Are they vocal? Yeah,
go ahead. When you're talking about flight or freeze, the fight would be just picking a fight with their brothers and sisters?
No, it's a biological reaction. The brain senses a threat, that amygdala I was talking about, the emotional brain senses it's either a real or perceived threat. It's saying, I don't feel comfortable. Something's wrong. Like, there's a lot of different messages that our brain signals that puts us into a biological reaction, which is fight, flight, freeze. It actually happens in the brainstem. It's a neurotransmitters run through our body. That's where we get the heart rate increasing because our adrenaline's flowing. Or with children, they shut down more, so it's more the freeze and everything gets suppressed. So if you really want to understand it, there's so much good information online about this. There's books and books and books and podcasts and videos about. And you can always email me if you want a specific resource. I can try to offer something that I like or trust. So, but it's a biological reaction, the fight, flight, freeze. If they're acting out and they're loud, yelling, or angry, it might be a fight response they're having. So we'll do another exercise together that will help get insight into your breathing and what state you might be in, whether fight, flight, freeze, or calm. Calm is the best, right? I want to be in calm all the time, but it's hard. So is that helpful to hear? Okay.
Can I ask another question?
Yeah, sure.
So when we're talking about teenagers that have kind of chronic anxiety,
mm-hmm.
So we have some kids that will not necessarily express that they're doing things. Right. Like, not necessarily, but there are probably some symptoms we should look for as far as like health-wise that mm-hmm. might be presented. Are there anything like, you know, sleep?
Oh, yeah, it's... Yeah, this is such a complex, like, I wish I had an easy answer for you, but the connection before correction, like connecting, I'll talk more about that, about how to be more mindful and aware of what your teen or child is going through. And that, a lot of that's based on affect, like their emotional state, what they're showing on their face, okay? Because we all have a thing we show and a way we feel. So we'll get into that a little bit real shortly. There's also, I can't get into this, it's too big, but there's trauma. I mean, when we have like foster kids, we're dealing with trauma. That's a whole different intensity of what I'm speaking about with fight, flight, freeze. So, and tons of great resources online for children who are in the foster care system. The first thing I would suggest for all of us, kids, teens, me, you, pastors, is breathing. Focus on our breathing. It's so important. That's the body's first defense against calming the brain down. Is when we have the fight, flight, or freeze, the body wants to breathe. It wants to say, you're okay. And that we do that anchoring through our breath. So Let's try this last exercise together. I'm gonna have you guys count your breaths. I'm gonna time it. Well, maybe, is there a clock in here? If someone, can someone run their phone for 30 seconds when I say go? So it'll beep, if anybody's willing to do that. And I'll talk about what's gonna happen. We'll count 30 seconds. I want you just to focus on your breathing, okay? An inhale and an exhale is one breath. All right, so just normally breathe like you do and count how many happen. I'll tell you when 30 seconds is up. You got it? Okay. All right. Good, awesome. Okay, so is everybody ready?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead and start. Okay, so whatever number you have, multiply it by 2. Okay. Okay. So if your number's 10 or over, you might have, your nervous system might be in fight or flight. So you don't have to say your number, but remember the chemical reactions. If we're running, if we have anxiety, even if it's low level, if we're just had a stressful day or super busy, that gears up the chemicals in the brain, adrenaline in the adrenal gland, adrenal gland, adrenaline, norepinephrine, those chemicals get activated. They're meant to help us fight stress. So 10 or higher, it's like, okay, my body might be feeling a little bit of stress or a little bit of something that's creating a tiny bit of anxiety. So just for information, the anxiety strategies help parents too. Okay. Any questions about that? About that exercise? Before we move on? Okay. Anxiety is what we've discovered. It's a signal from your body. It's a signal and it is inevitable. It's actually at times can be helpful because it's a motivator. It gives us a signal. Let's go. Or something's up or we need to address this. It informs us, okay? If we can see it in that way, it could be helpful when dealing with our kiddos. We encourage our clients to learn to like accept it as part of your experience. It's not who you are. It is not a label. It is not like you're anxious. It's your feeling anxiety. Okay, so we want to create a little bit of space with our kids and that they're not, we do this automatically. We're like, you're anxious. It's like you're experiencing anxiety and that's in relation excuse me, to the biology of it, all the body's going through that creates anxiety, okay? Encourage them to not judge it, not judge themselves because they have anxiety. It's just a normal human thing, and it's it can be really disrupting. It can be very uncomfortable, so nobody wants it, but it is inevitable, and it is a signal. So if we pay attention to it, we can manage it, so remember, keep in mind that amygdala is the memory maker. So everything we go through, our brain's going to remember like, oh, I feel anxious. And then when it happens again, it tends to kick up our anxiety even more because we remember how uncomfortable it felt. So that's where the coping skills come in. So this is pivotal. This point, this is science, neuroscience has shown this to be true is just talking about it, like we are right now, it doesn't really change it enough. We have to actually help our children experience what it feels like to feel less anxious. It has to be a body experience, because again, that amygdala holds all the memory. So, more time, like y'all have all the time in the world, right? But it's tough. But I hope I can leave you guys hopeful to do all these practices in little bits, like maybe one thing at a time. For instance, there's this awesome book. It's this practical, fun book about how to talk so your kids will listen, and listen so your kids will talk. When I was a parent, I was like, there's no way I'm gonna read this book. Way too big, I don't have time, right? You feeling me, right? Maybe you all do read and I didn't. That's a lot. That's a lot of information when you're raising a family and working, or even just raising a family that is working. So I suggest maybe in with resources, just take one thing, take one chapter, maybe even one exercise and do it at a time and step out of that, you know, that over, just too much to do. So small, small steps. Okay, the resource list, I did kind of go over that. Let's see. I want to talk a little bit about, I have a second page here for helping our kids through anxiety and depression. I have 13 coping skills on here, but there are so many more out there. And if you look on legitimate, reliable websites, careful what you read, but there's a lot of good information. So what I think is most important with your kids, your particular kids, is find the ones that they like. Because I can say, well, let's do, for me, the deep breathing is for all people. Like, that's that fight or flight, freeze, calm that brain down. That one should be done, ideally, 2 times a day. I try to do it when I wake up and when I go to bed. Just even a minute or two is plenty to get that brain calmed down, okay? So that one should be, in my thought, a regular practice. And you can do it with prayer, too. You can incorporate prayer and deep breathing. So one way to do that is 3 slow breaths, nice and slow in and out. And then keep your feet on the ground. Make sure, because that grounds your nervous system. All your nerve endings end in your feet. So it helps your body feel kind of anchored. So there's other ways too. But you guys can look through these and like let me throw out a few to see what you think. One of my favorites that I learned to slow down in life is to eat mindfully. Does anybody know about that? How to slow down your eating? Like, what do we do? Right? Go, go, go. Fast food. We're like on the go. No time to think about what we're eating. Don't even know what it tastes like. We just stuff it in our mouth. That's not good for us. We all know that, right? We know that. But still, that busy, busy keeps us almost wound sometimes. So one great thing about this practice is we have to eat. So it's a great way to incorporate it, okay? So breakfast is a good time. You're more fresh in the morning. Maybe one day a week, you can try it with your children and sit down and slow down. Like, ask them, let's slow it down just for today. Let's see what the food tastes like, what it looks like, the color of it. Like, get your senses engaged, because when our amygdala's on fire, we're not engaged with our sensory. We're not noticing all the details, and that really helps us to just slow down and notice, be more mindful. So, and it helps with not rushing. It's better for our digestion, so that's good too. There's a whole lot of literature and thought process about time in, time out, timeouts. My culture, my era, act like I'm ancient here, but I'm almost 60. Timeout was a thing. Is it still a thing? You parents with young children? It's still a thing. Okay. See, oh, I feel so old.
Wise.
What's that?
You're wise, not old.
Yes, thank you. Well, it's like, timeout's still a thing. I'm behind the times, but that's okay. Time in helps better. And there's lots of practice on this. Time in is, and this is where a parent can help a child co-regulate. So when your child's upset, they're having a moment, they're upset, they lose their mind. That's what we call it. You're losing your mind. We tend to like go calm down. That's okay. But when we co-regulate with them, we go even just for a minute or two, go be with them. Go sit next to them. Or better, even better, is face-to-face if they'll allow it. Sometimes they're so shut down, they don't want to look at anybody. So they're, you know, they're in their own world. So maybe next to them. But co-regulating, it helps your nervous system. We share vibes here with nervous systems. Like, I walked in here today and I thought, I'm going to be super nervous, but I wasn't, because I have learned to calm my nervous system down. And it feels so much better. So I want to encourage you guys to do that too, to work on your nervous system. So to do this well, to co-regulate with children and teens, you have to be regulated yourself. If you're really mad, don't do it. Don't do it. Because they're going to vibe off of your, and that's okay, it happens. It happens. But what this does is it helps with the mirror neurons in our brain. We get to be together. The child feels that threat, the fight, flight, freeze thing. They feel a little safer. Even though they may not show it, they're like, okay, I'm not alone. I'm here with my parent and they're with me. It's just, that's powerful. Powerful, powerful stuff. So again, there's a lot of information online about co-regulation. So help yourself to learn. There's things like sounds. We talked about that earlier. Sound stuff that really is helpful. Science has shown recently there's three top nature sounds that calm the brain right down. Guesses to what they might be? Three?
Whales.
I heard all three already. So, not whales. So, was it whales? I love whale sounds, but that is not on the list. Okay. Bird song, which is a great time of year right now. Open those windows. Man, that's so calming. And then any kind of water, rain, waterfalls, ocean, doesn't matter. And then wind in the trees. That sound. So kids love headphones. If they're upset, hey, try this. You know, it's not like, just try it. See if they like it. If they don't like it, I would give it maybe at least two tries. If they don't like it, move on to the next thing, okay? Because don't say, like, that didn't work. What you said didn't work. Of course it didn't. Not everything works. So you guys got to try, okay? And this is a short list. There's probably, on the internet, there's probably hundreds and hundreds of ways to regulate and calm the body down. So the big one I think we should address in this modern time is technology. That's a big one. I know there's another talk coming up around that, so I won't dive into it, but what I encourage people to do with really good results is put the technology away for a short period of time, for one day only. Like, just try it. Like the bike thing, give it a try. See what happens. Watch your kids and ask them, how do you feel not having your screen? And what I mean screens, like all screens. Not like, I'll have your phone, but you can go play on the computer. No screens for 1 hour. Try it. And then maybe up to two over time, over a week or two. And then some families I know, they are really brave. They go like half a day without screens, which sounds so like, that shouldn't be hard, right? It's kind of hard. We're really dependent on it. So that's one area with screen time. I think this is really hard to do right now with the way we're all coming off of a pandemic. I can't get into that, but we're stressed, we're tired. Aren't we all tired? Are we tired? I'm tired, but I do a ton of self-care. If I didn't, I don't think I could do my job. It would be really hard. So self-care is important too. We'll get into that, but what technology, getting away from screens, is self-care. It's getting that brain geared down. We're not, you know, caught up in the feedback loop and that kind of wound thing that technology can do to all of us. So that's just a few ideas.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So what do you think about music within that kind of take a break from screens and things like that?
Yeah, music's good. It's good. It's like calming music's best. So that's where the nature sounds. Music's good, real good. It's creative, you know, it engages parts of the brain that we don't always use. So, yeah, it's great. Absolutely.
Well, can we move on from the coping mechanisms or what you're working on right here? For the rest of us that don't do what you do, what would be like a legitimate website or something that you would say, hey, this is a good place to go to learn these things? Because I feel like not knowing what you know and living the way that you live, I don't know what to believe and what not to believe.
I know, me neither.
That's
Thank you for the not helpful, right? Well, I can, like, there's so many. I would start with, like, this book is great. I showed it to Andrew earlier. It's a mindfulness workbook for teen anxiety. So it doesn't, I mean, it may not help with kiddos, but maybe things in here can be simplified, or you can look online for a book geared more toward youth, children like under 13. So tons of strategies in here. Again, one at a time. And I could talk about all these, but that wouldn't be helpful. I'd rather you guys get the book or look online and do the ones that you feel would fit for your family, okay? Because it's not a one-size-fits-all. So that would be a good resource. As far as good apps, it's on here, like Calm. Does anybody use the Calm app? Yeah, okay. I like it. It's free to a point, then it's paid, but guess what? It's all over YouTube for free. So you don't have to pay for those things. You don't have to. So that's one website or app or on your computer that you can, it's one of those things you have to try it. Like the first one, the very first call, it's like number one. It's a basic intro into mindfulness. Man, you feel your body. It feels different when you do that 10-minute meditation. And incorporate prayer into it. The point is you get the body quiet. You get the mind more quiet, right? And that get the brain less active, activated.
Debbie, do you have any links on your website, on your stuff?
I haven't gotten there yet. My schedule's so full, so. But I can think, what I think would be great is if people wanted to, they could submit, like anonymously, a few specific things that are going on in your families, maybe to Jim and Andrew. Would that be appropriate? Mm-hmm. Anonymous, and then send it to me, and I can do more tailored. Because when I work with a client, I tailor their treatment to the person. It's not a cookie cutter. Okay, you have anxiety, try this. Okay, have a good day. I want to work with you, how you are and what you're going through and so forth. So if I saw some of these questions, I could probably try to tailor a little more, okay? So if you want to do that, send in some specifics for your situation. Jim can email me, or Andrew can email me, okay?
Okay. Have you used the Therapist Aid website before?
What is it? I'm sorry?
Therapist Aid.
No, I haven't.
So I'm a social worker.
Oh, great.
So Therapist Aid is free worksheets that are a lot of different topics.
Right.
So like kids and then any topic, and there'd be like a page of ideas.
Great. So awesome.
Helpful resource. Mm-hmm.
Great. Maybe that can be written on here if you take a sheet. Mm-hmm. Therapist Aid, thank you. There's so much information. Yeah. The main thing is like how can we, to me, before we can address an issue, we have to calm our brain down. That's the first thing. Again, that brain, intellectual thinking brain and amygdala fight each other. So calm brain means we can work on strategies. So you guys are free to ask me questions if you want more detail after. I can stay for a little bit if you'd like, okay? Or you can also email me if you'd like. I don't mind. Let's talk a little bit about anger and depression. Okay. We are still figuring out what causes depression. There's a lot of causes. So it tends to be an internalizing process. Just something gets internalized in conjunction with biology, genetics, so forth, can create these really heavy emotions. So the key with that, with helping kids and teens, is to gently let it surface. Like, talk about ways to validate emotion. Even if what's so hard with parents, even if we don't agree, just talk to your kids about, I noticed you look fill in the blank. It's not about agreeing, or it's about noticing what is happening inside their body. Okay, and that's a it's not a common thing we talk about, so it's kind of hard to propose it in public because we just don't know much about how to respond to our kids in that way. We go through what they're thinking, but what they're feeling is important to validate that, and then we go to the emotional regulation to help them feel calmer, safer, lack of threat or lower threat. All right, then we can think about that. When the brain is more online, this part we can think through things more. And then we all have experiences with our teenagers with moods, hormones. That's a real thing. It causes disruption, instability, stress affects our kids big time. And they don't have the experiences we have to be able to cope with it. I think as a parent for me, that was hard. Like I didn't know. I was like, well, let's just do this, you know? It's like, they're like, I don't know. I'm like, I forget that I have a ton of experience and practice at these things and they don't. So something to think about. Typically, a little bit of just background, usually with depression, there are a lot of emotions going on, but they're kind of like underneath the, I guess what you see as depression. We have an underlying primary emotion there. So medications, that's a big topic. A lot of people are for them. Some don't want them. Some aren't sure. But meds are typically, I don't have yes you should or no you shouldn't. I don't work that way. I work with their function, like how is your function level? If anybody is struggling where they can't function, meds is probably a good idea, okay, to think about temporarily at least. If not long term, it depends on everybody's situations are really, really different. So the med's purpose is to balance out neurotransmitters, chemical reactions in the brain, especially serotonin, which is our, I feel pretty good, chemical. So did you guys know that? There's a chemical in your brain that helps you feel good? Like, are we taught that? I don't remember being taught that. I learned that in grad school, paid a lot of money to learn that. But that's a real thing. Like, okay, chemicals are off. What can we do? So in addition, to me, meds is one of the many ways to address anxiety and depression. There's so many ways. Coping skills is one way. Calm, like as calm as we can be, or decreasing stress, external stressors is another way. So a good process to think about with our youth is to think through, which is I loved. I read a little bit of this, Jim. I really loved it because it helps you like think about your relationship to God. Are you guys familiar with this book? Okay. Yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot. How real human issues, how do we talk about that in context to our relationship with God and our faith? So that is a thank you for that resource. Another great one. I don't have it on the list because I figured you guys are very familiar with this book through the church. Okay. But thinking through, like, helping your, how many people have the time truly to sit and talk with their kids, like what's going on? Can you identify what the problem is? Mm-hmm. How can we calm down your emotion and help you feel less upset and think about what to do? How many of us do that?
For all of them?
Yes. Yes, Jim. Yeah, exactly. It's hard. That's the point, is what we're proposing as counselors is not easy. And so I don't want families walking out of here like, oh my gosh, so much work. Again, small chunks, one thing at a time. One thing at a time. Or maybe group, I don't know. I don't know your kids. Group therapy. But it's hard, but it's incredible. The power of connection, even in a minute or two, makes a huge difference by sitting down, looking at each other, that's the neural pathways and the mirror neurons in the body, toning our voice down a little bit, taking the parents taking a time out, so we can be calmer. It it just works, and it takes time to learn to do that. And I hope you all try some of these processes with your kiddos and see how it goes. Like, look at their face, you know? Watch and see how they're doing. Ask questions too. How are we doing? So that's kind of the process in helping kids think about it, is you identify the problem, okay? Regulate, get that nervous system more calm, and then think about ideas or solutions, so in that order. I believe that's on here too. I have it written as observe what's happening, how you feel, regulate, and then like accept that anxiety is normal, and then find the solutions, okay? This is a big one. This is going to be a little bit of an owie. It was for me when my kids told me. I was like, what? But I'm going to share it because I would have loved to have known. So the big question is, do your kids feel loved? I know all kinds of stuff that goes with that, but this is what research shows. They've interviewed many, many, many children, teenagers, and probably middle school age kids. This is what the research I got from this study. And they said they knew, kids knew they were loved. They know that. They feel loved by their families. What happens a lot, though, is parents, a lot of the interactions with their children is based on like chores, school, and more duty-based things. So did you do that? Did you do that? You know, I did that with all three of my children. I parented that way a lot. And later, my kids were brave enough because I gave them permission to, of course, speak honestly to me. And they said, man, Mom, you know, sometimes you just, like, we were afraid to tell you how we felt. Like, we didn't want you to be upset. You were so stressed all the time. We didn't want you to be more stressed. So they didn't feel, not that they weren't loved, they didn't feel that connection with me that, hey, we can just talk about these more difficult things and it's okay. It's okay to talk about these things. And so just an awareness piece. It's easy to go on autopilot for all of us. I know that. That's a truth that's not easy to change, but I think it's worth it over time. So one thing that really science showed that I thought was amazing is when you see your kids, like I guess when they come home from school or get up in the morning, those kind of daily interactions, do you feel excited to see them? Do you greet them? Like, how do we greet our children? Hey, hi, you know, good to see you. Or many times, oh, okay, whatever it is, be mindful about it.